Hello and welcome to Mike M's Weekly Reads. And for this particular episode, I was supposed to record a clip for the comic book page spotlight. And I was planning on doing it, but I thought the timeline for getting submissions in were the normal timeline for the preview spotlight. So previews just came out this week, and I thought I'd have another week to submit this clip. And usually what the comic book page preview spotlight is, it's really a fantastic show, and I have gotten some information that has caused me to buy some extra stuff from it. Is it's a show where people send in clips of what they want to order from previews and why, and it's a pretty good show. I've been listening to it for a very long time. It started off, I think, as Bob and John, Bob Breitel and John Mayo, doing a clip. And then it became more like anybody could submit a clip. And it grew from there. And a lot of people in the community, they submit clips. A lot of people submit things they're passionate about and they're loyal to their comics. So there's one guy that submits all the Superman clips, because that's what he gets. That's what he specializes in. That's what he's passionate about. There's other guys that, like James, he talks about some humanoids books and some books that are international and other stuff. So there's lots of different people that like different things. John focuses on superheroes. That's what his passion is. Primarily the Marvel and DC, but he ventures into Valiant and Ultraverse and stuff that offers stuff in the superhero genre. Me, I'm just all over the board. But anyway, every month, they typically have this episode where you could submit your clips on what in previews you're passionate about. But this month, John is going on a vacation, and he won't be able to process stuff in a timely manner for previews coming out, which is coming out late because of the holidays. I think it came out Friday, which is a weird day, last week, like right after Christmas. But it would take another week or so for people to digest it, get their copies, and then submit their clips. The other thing that a lot of people do is they go to the comic book page forum, and in there is a way to get all the digital solicitations. And what's interesting about that is Diamond is asking publishers now to not put out their stuff earlier. So I wonder how that's going to affect things, as you know, going forward, if people like DC and Marvel are putting out their stuff later just so they can get previews out, or how that will pan out. But either way, it makes for an interesting show, and somebody that's passionate about something could submit a clip and convince you to buy something that you wouldn't normally buy or try something. For example, I think it was Brawlinator, on the forums. He submitted a clip for Killraven. And I have most of that series that he appeared in, but I don't have the Killraven issues. And there was what are those called? Marvel Masterworks book coming out, hardcover. And he gave like a synopsis of what this character was, and I was like, you know what? That sounds interesting. I'm gonna add that to my list. So there's occasionally stuff that I get off there. Most of the stuff I don't, because I buy most stuff. And I'll go into that in answering these questions. And some of you will probably say, you know what, I think I'm going to skip this because I think Mike has already answered this, but I'm going to answer these questions the way John asked them, and it could last a long time to get all my thoughts out. And it's probably a good idea that I didn't submit my clip, because then I'd end up hogging that podcast. And I think they like to keep their podcast to like an hour to an hour and a half, and if you just have me babbling on for several hours, then I would hog the podcast, and I don't want to do that. So for those of you that are on Comic Book Page Slack channel, which you probably see me on there occasionally, and they know that I'm going to be doing this. This is episode 120 of Mike M's Weekly Reads, so welcome. I don't expect you to listen to all the episodes. The format's really simple. I start talking about some topics. I answer listener questions, and I have I could talk forever about comics. I love comics. I've never stopped collecting comics except once in my entire life, and it was only because I needed a save for a house. And that only lasted for, I think, a 3 month period, and then I started increasing the list again of what I was getting. But that was the only time I've ever had to stop. I mean, there are times when things, if I ever lose my job for some reason, I will be smart about it. I'm very logical about things, except when it comes to comics. But I know I never will spend more than I can afford. So, I won't let my credit card debt go out. I never have credit card debt. I don't want to have debt. So as I use my credit card, I pay my credit card. That's what I do. But those aren't any of his questions, and you can already see why it's probably a good idea why I'm not submitting to the comic book page, because I'm just rambling. I ramble and I ramble and I ramble this, and I talk. So on the forum, the questions were, how do you pick what you get? I grew up in an era that Christmas was like a really crazy time to go into the Sears JCPenney catalogs and pick things that you wanted to get for Christmas. And my family didn't come from a large amount of money, but they saved Christmas clubs and stuff, and they tried to get us gifts that we wanted. And they would ask us, what do you want from Santa? What gifts do you want from Santa? And you go into these catalogs and you'd circle all these gifts. And ooh, I forgot about that. I'm so It was cold in there. We had just went to Dion's. And see, this is the rambling that that goes on when I talk. And usually when I record this, I record it when my wife is not around. In other words, she's upstairs or she's at yoga or whatever, but she's here today and she's listening to me talk. And I saw her get off the couch and make a sprint, like she was in track in high school, to the garage, and my brain still didn't register, like, why is she sprinting to the garage? Well, she was sprinting to the garage because we went to eat at Dion's Pizza, which is also in Albuquerque, but we have one here in Colorado Springs, and we like to get green chili on our pizza, and they have like the best green chili. The pizza's the best. Green chili, sausage, and pepperoni pizza. We get it regularly. I would say at least once a month, if not twice a month, we eat at Dion's. Sometimes it's not the pizza, sometimes it's the sandwiches, and sometimes it's the salad. But anyway, to get to the point, and this is how all my podcasts go, so I apologize if you're like, get to the point. But I ramble a lot. And when I'm talking to myself, I just exercise the freedom of thought. And that's what you get on this podcast. But we got salads to have tomorrow. Barb has to work tomorrow. I have one more day off of freedom. One more day. And I'm spending my day. I'm going to see, I think it's called Mortal Engines or what? Do you remember what it's called? It's a movie that flopped at the box office, but it was some of the producers and stuff that did Lord of the Rings, and it looks steampunkish, and I'm just going by myself to see it, like the early feature at 9 a.m. But 'cause I've already seen Bumblebee, which is fantastic for the 80s. Okay, so 80s were my high school years and stuff, and late junior high, and that's when like songs like just they get impounded in your head. And this movie was a prequel to all the Transformers films, and Bumblebee was the prequel, and it happened in the 80s, so it already clicked with me because of the time period. And then it had all the Smiths songs and all these songs I absolutely loved growing up. So when they played Girlfriend in a Coma and a couple other ones, I was like, oh man, I'm very simple to please in any form of entertainment, because I work in the engineering field, my mind works in that, and I find entertainment a form of release. And if I it makes me escape, and if I can escape reality and just enter these worlds of fantasy and fiction, and sometimes even slice of life, I love just to see somebody else's life or a documentary. I escape, and I don't think about other things, but I'm really focused in on what that thing is, and I absolutely love it. How did I get from pizza to this? I have no idea. But anyway, I had salads in the car, but today was 0 degrees and a wind chill of minus 11, so the garage feels like it's probably at least 20 degrees in there. I don't know, it might be a little hot, warmer, but it's definitely below freezing. It's pretty cold in there. We don't have central heat in the garage, but anyway, she was running in there to get salads because we're gonna eat salads tomorrow, and which is probably good for me because one of my resolutions, lose 20 pounds. So you could see how I just ramble and ramble and ramble. So it's probably a good thing that I am not recording, because John would have to edit, and I don't want to have him edit and it's be like, what is all this ridiculous talk and about pizza and salad, and how did it get from there to answering John's questions? But anyway, that's what I ramble on about. That's what Mike M's Weekly Reads is about. So his first question is, how do you pick what you get? But so I what I was saying is, I came from that era where we'd circle things in the catalog, and we wouldn't always get what we wanted, but God, it was so much fun. You open up this catalog, and they'd have this toy section, and I remember circling things. And the other catalog that I don't know where I got it from, but we got like a Heroes World catalog. And I remember it was in the form of comics. There wasn't pictures of the actual toys, but they'd have like the Mego figures. Somebody would draw them. I think it was actually students from the Kubert School that would draw these comics. And a matter of fact, I'm gonna try to those ones I treated as disposable comics, and I wish I wouldn't have, because they offer so much history, and I just love history. And I would love to see what I circled. God, I wish I kept these things. But these catalogs were drawn by students, sometimes Kubert himself, or they would draw Mego figures and stuff in there. And I remember circling the Mego figures, saying, "Oh, I want this one." And I would always shoot for things that I could never find. Like at Kmart, you might be able to find a Superman, a Batman, a Robin, and in that catalog, I saw Falcon. I'm like, oh crap, there's Aquaman. Oh wow, Green Arrow has a Mego figure. How does that happen? And they had Titans figures at the time, so I'd circle them, and I ended up getting a few of those. But anyway, the point is how do you pick what you want? I go to previews, which is to me, it's like psychologically a retro Christmas catalog for me to go through. And I spend at least 12 hours in a previous catalog. And initially, it's just 1 to 2 hours, as I love to absorb that. When previews first started coming out, I used to get both catalogs. There was a catalog, the Capital and the Diamond catalog. I'd get both of them. These were the two catalogs I absolutely loved. And then when previews took over and formed a monopoly, you had all the publishers in one catalog. And I remember some of those other catalogs would have dupes, so you would look at stuff presented differently. But to me, when I'd order through a comic shop back in the day in Albuquerque, going to Tall Tales, I believe it was at the time, especially when I started focusing on the catalog, I think that store's still around too. It had turned into a mess, though. It was a cleaner store when I went in there. Now there's like toys all over. It's chaotic mess. Didn't like the presentation. If you're in Albuquerque, go to Astro Zombies. Now that one's in Nob Hill, and that is a fun and clean shop. There are some other nice shops, but you see how I'm tangenting again? I'm still at, okay. So this goes back to the catalog. So I have a long history with these catalogs. Unfortunately, unlike John, I treated these catalogs as disposable until very, very recently. And I regret it. I don't have many comic book related regrets because every comic that I ever purchased from age 5, I still own. I never got rid of any of them. During the ages of 5 and 8, I didn't have a lot of money. So when I did purchase a comic book or get a comic book, I would trade them. So I didn't always have, it would be one for one. And I had, if I could go back and change time, one of the things I would have done is there was a friend that I had in elementary school, and his name was Edward. I'm not going to give his last name, but he would bring to the school, I would bring my comics. My comics kind of sucked because I didn't have a lot of money. My dad didn't have a lot of money. I didn't buy a lot of comics, but I had a lot of comics, and this is how we got comics. They would rip off the cover. The drugstore would rip off the cover. They'd send the cover back to the publisher, and they'd get refunded some percentage of money for every comic book they didn't sell. And then they would box up, and the quote here is box up. Very cleanly, they'd throw these comic books in boxes, pretty big boxes, with these covers ripped off, but all intact, and take them to the garbage dump. Or they'd have somebody pick them up and throw them in the dump. Well, one of my favorite things to do as a child was to go to this junkyard with my dad, and my dad would be in the pickup, and we'd drive into this pile of junk. And my dad would be throwing off our trash into the garbage dump, from the truck. And I'd help him unload the truck as much as I could. He'd launch like 2 bags. I'd get half a bag or whatever and throw it in the garbage. And then we'd go patrolling. And the patrolling was very fun. And it's probably not healthy because I am going through trash, okay? But we'd find these boxes, and they were sealed boxes of comic books, and that's how I got into comic books, and I had a lot. So what I could do is I could trade 10 issues of coverless comics for one issue of a comic. But this guy Edward, his father had given, and this is before, yes, you would open up a comic book and they would have prices, but these Silver Age books were not outrageously priced. So Edward's father was into the Marvel in the 60s. So the early 60s, when Fantastic Four number one is, Strange Tales, Tales of Astonish, Tales of Suspense, Captain America, Avengers, Fantastic Four, Shield, Nick Fury, Agent of Shield, all these comic books, they were pretty much in, I would say, VG to fine condition, because the father took care of him. Of course, Edward didn't take care of him as well. But I traded so many through, and God, I wish I would. I had like an amazing fantasy go through my hands. I read it, several Steranko's, many, many, many books. But I would trade it again off of that. And then I started earning allowance around 6 and 7, and you do chores around the house, do stuff like that, earn some allowance. Back then, 25 cents, 30 cents would get you a comic book. So I'd go to the drugstore, which was probably a quarter of a mile away from my house. But my parents would drive there because the grocery store was right there. It was a Piggly Wiggly. And there was a drugstore next to there. And they'd have a spinner rack. And that's how I was getting my comic books. And there was other places spinner racks. I remember there was a drugstore near a TGNY store that my grandfather took me to. And but ever since I got out of that trading business, I've sort of collected everything, every comic book that ever came into my possession, and I didn't want to get rid of it. And I've had that mentality with everything. The only thing I've ever disposed and the only thing I've had regrets, and I've changed that, is my Wizard magazines and the previews. I wish I would have kept them because I love to look at the old ones. It is such a snapshot in time, and it's just a wonderful thing. So I've since reacquired some of the Wizards, some of the comic scenes. I got rid of my comic scenes. I can't believe it. God, there were just so much wealth of information in those things. But the comics I never got rid of. And I've changed my strategy. I've reacquired some Wizards. I've reacquired some Hero Illustrated comic scene. I have the first issue of it. I found it at a like a flea market store. But yeah, so anyway, that leads me to the previews. These catalogs I absolutely loved, and I've ordered from them since. I think back in the day, once I started going to Tall Tales and had a pull list, it wasn't my first comic shop. My first comic shop was Don's Paperback Book Exchange, and they got comics there. And I didn't have a pull list there, but I would go to the rack and I would just go nuts. I would just grab everything I possibly could because at that age, I was mowing grasses around the neighborhood and I was making pretty damn good money. It was like $20 for front and back yards. I'd mow, I don't know, maybe like 6, 7 yards. And then I'd have, that's a lot of money. And comic books back then were like 60 cents. So I would be able to get those, a lot of comics. So I was already like intaking a bunch of comics at this time. But then I went to Tall Tales and got into the previews catalog. And this thing was amazing, the Capitol catalog. I absolutely loved to go through it, find out what comics were coming out. It was like looking at that Christmas catalog and wishing that you could get these things, and I'd make my pull list. And back then, very heavy into Marvel and DC. I very seldom explored outside of it. I did get some Eclipse comics. Trying to think of stuff that I got that was outside the norm. I think like the first set there were some Eclipse like Aztec Ace and some like that, but I really got into the Eagle comic books, and Eagle comic books was publishing Judge Dredd stuff, Nemesis, Strontium Dog, Berserker, several of these 2000 AD characters. So I started to get into all of those. That was like my first time I started to explore outside of the big two. Really always had a passion for DC as opposed to Marvel. I don't know why that is. I attribute it. John's talked about this before on the comic book page spotlight about Super Friends making an impact on him. They made a huge impact on me. At that time, cartoons were like a big deal. They were like, I didn't have no alarm. I would set this internal alarm clock inside my head. It would go off at like 5 a.m. Okay, so it went off at 5 a.m. I would get up. Watch the color bars on the screen until I could see a cartoon, and then I would just marathon through it. But most of it was I didn't ever want to miss a Super Friends ever. I followed Super Friends from all the Super Friends episodes. I followed Batman and Robin when they were in Scooby-Doo. I followed Batman Adventures. I think it was the Batman and Tarzan Adventure Hour, Lone Ranger. I followed all that stuff. And in Super Friends, you had the Super Friends, if I remember correctly. You had, what came after? The Challenge of the Super Friends. And then you had like the Superpowers something hour. That's when that Firestorm and Cyborg came. I had watched all of those religiously, absolutely loving every bit of those cartoons. But they got me into comic books and kept me into previews. So I got to get back on track. Okay, so I gotta roll back. And I don't edit, so you have to put up with this. That's the thing. If you're very structured, like John's a very structured podcaster, if you love structure, you probably shouldn't listen to me because you hear me ramble and ramble and ramble, and it could become frustrating. So, anyways, yeah, I went to cartoons, but Super Friends had a huge impact in me loving DC Comics. Wonder Twins, what was it? Marvin, Wendy and Marvin, and Wonder Dog. What was his name? Gleek was the Wonder Twin powers activate. I saw them. Oh, man, I love these things. But anyway, that leads me to previews. So previews is how I selected books. And back then, I selected books pretty much in the DC, and then I tiered off into Marvel. And if I ever had to cut back, because all the comic book money that I was using at this time, if lawns weren't being mowed, I had to do some other chores or something. And you obviously in the summertime, from like March to, I don't know, September, I had, lawns being mowed and then nothing. So I'd have to pocket that and then distribute it. Or sometimes my parents would give me a gift certificate for Christmas for these comic stores, and then I would have some stockpile, which I kind of liked. But I had pull lists, heavy DC, and then a lot in Marvel. But I use the previous catalog. So all in all, how do I pick things? I go to the previous catalog, but my strategies are very different than most people's. By the way, a lot of Jack Kirby's drawn technologies in 70s DC comics influenced my decision to go into engineering. All this boom tube technology and cubes and all this stuff, mother boxes. A matter of fact, I bought a mother box from previews because I had to hear it ping. It's a really amazing box. It goes ping, ping, and it does all these like weird sounds and stuff. If you're interested, I'll take a picture of it if anybody wants to see what a mother box looks like. But yeah, I use these catalogs and I pick stuff, and usually it's simple for me. The last 15 years have been pretty simple because I buy everything DC. So I love to still go through the DC catalog, but it doesn't influence anything that I buy. I just say bundle, 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 everything, everything, everything. And for some reason, I still want to support my LCS. So I get 70% of my DC comics through the LCS, even though I know I'm taking a hit on the discount. It goes down from 40%. Or 40/50% down to 25%, but I like my LCS. I'm still a Wednesday warrior. I go to my LCS, get my DC comics. Everything else is done through DCBS. And I would have probably stuck with my LCS, but I started to, even though I love the guy, Ed's Cards and Comics, I was missing stuff in the back half of previews, so I started migrating around 2006 back half stuff, and then it became more, and then it became more, and then it became more. And DCBS now gets a healthy paycheck from me every month. But for selecting things, I'm all in DC. I'm about 80% into Marvel, so I do have a selection process in Marvel. I do have gaps because if I ever feel like I have to cut back, it's always out of Marvel. But I think Marvel gives you a lot of value. I love the fact that you get the digital code and the comic book. I think that's a huge value. For a podcaster, it's very valuable because if you ever have to refer back to an old issue, or if somebody says, "Man, this got me excited," and you want to revisit it, it's much easier to pull up your tablet and say, "Oh yeah, there's panel blah blah blah. I want to see it." Boom, and then to actually find your long boxes and go get it. But all so let's go. Let's say 80% Marvel, 100% DC, so that takes care of the big two. Right now, I think I'm doing about 80% image. So I do spend a lot more time being selective in image, even though I get 80%. A lot of the new number ones I'll try, but I'm still getting a lot from image. And I have all their original stuff. I was on an I was ex the 90s. People say the 90s are crap. There was a lot of experimentation and excitement in the 90s, man. The 90s had a comic book explosion because of Image. You had Ultraverse, you had Malibu, you had Valiant. All these comic books just took off. You had Triumphant that had these numbers in the corner that were. They actually controlled their print run. That was all sci-fi. So many different companies. Later on in the 2000s, you had CrossGen. So many, all in, by the way. I love Dead Universes, by the way. I have a full Ultraverse collection, a full Valiant collection of every Valiant comic ever published. I'm working on a full Atlas run. They were short-lived, maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years. I think I have 80% of it. There's a few obscure stuff like romance titles and stuff that I'm having a really hard time filling. Where was I thinking? What was I? I lost my train of thought. But anyway, selecting the books in the back half of previews, I spend more time because there's always new publishers, there's always new number ones, and do I want to add this book? And I usually commit to a lot, like Vault Comics all in, Scout Comics all in, Valiant Comics all in, Ahoy Comics all in. Now TKO, which is a different publisher that you have to go to their website, all in. What else am I all in? Oni, I'm kind of like, I don't know, 10% in. There's not a lot in there for me. Avatar, 100% in. Boundless, I get a few out of that. What else is there? Trying to think of. Some of the other publishers. Aftershock, 100% in. So I get everything that comes out of the publisher. Black Mask, 100% in. So you can see that I just get these, and I still like to read the previews because there's new number ones. I get excited for new companies that are popping up. Waxwork, probably one of the publishers of the year for me. Waxwork Publishing. They do Poser and a Waxwork comic, and one's an anthology, and they're in the horror genre. They actually do horror records too, which is interesting. But one of the publishers of the year, I fell in love with that publisher. Ahoy Comics, a new publisher, absolutely loved all of the stuff that came out from them. The only one I haven't read is the Edgar Allan Poe. But I have plans to read that for Geek Brunch, so you'll be able to see if I they're 100% across the board. But I'm probably going to just stick with 100% because I support the publisher. There's a lot of stuff. I've got into SourcePoint Press, you name it. And for a lot of it, I'm 100% in. Dark Horse, probably 50% in. And I'm going to take a drink of water because when you talk like me, you need to keep your throat wet. So, previews is a big source of it. I usually wait. I don't look at digital previews. I usually wait till the previews magazine comes up. I still get the previews from the comic shop and not from DCBS. So, a Wednesday Warrior, I go get my previews. I spend Wednesday probably 2 hours in there. And then it becomes, and you might not want to hear this, but it's truth, it becomes a bathroom book. The bad thing about that is you can discover some gems in the back half of previews if you spend a lot of time in the. Well, everybody has to go to the bathroom. You spend 5 minutes in the bathroom, you have pick up something to read, and it's previews, and you spend a time in a publisher and you read a little snippet, like from Humanoids or from Drawn and Quarterly or Fantagraphics, and you're like, that sounds interesting. Maybe I should buy this. So that's the selection process. Probably, like I said, spend about 8 hours in previews total for the month. That includes the DC, Marvel, and regular previews catalog. Just love it. I even like looking at the toys, even though I've kind of like went out of the toys. But I did go through a huge phase while the Bowen busts were coming out, where I had to have all the Bowen busts. And then I ran out of display space. But Eagle Moss is another thing I use in previews. I have every single DC Eagle Moss ever put out in a display case, and they're amazing. I mean, this is like an army of DC figures, and you could tell that I just love DC, the history. I also have a weird philosophy, and I can afford to have that philosophy, but if something happened, I probably couldn't. But my philosophy is every comic book matters. I want to read the bad, I want to read the good, I want to read all of it. Because to me, even though some is out of continuity, and some is in continuity, and some doesn't really matter in the long run, it matters to me because that is a history of a character. That is a history. I want to know everything of Black Lightning. I want to know everything about Red Tornado. I want to know everything about Ragman or the Challengers of the Unknown. Every single thing I could possibly get my hands on, I want to know. Even if it's crap, I want to know it. I want to know it. It's part of the history. I want to know it. So I come with that philosophy. It's a weird philosophy, and I only know one other person, one other podcaster, the Comic Book Addict. And Michael Pindell, he has the same philosophy. He acquires any book he can possibly get. He wants to read every possible book that he wants to get. I want to read every single comic book ever published, but I'm going to die. It's not physically possible unless I can become like Vandal Savage and live or throw myself into a Lazarus pit. I am going to die, unfortunately, and I'm not going to be able to read every single comic book that has ever been published. But I'm gonna try. I'm gonna damn well try. So that answers the first part of the question. I'm already 30 minutes, and John, if anybody listens from John's podcast, is like, thank God, he didn't put this in the podcast. There's probably only like one or two people that want to hear me rant anyway or talk in that particular area. I know Drew will probably listen. I think Jason from Hawaii will listen, and maybe James. He might want to listen, but other than that, probably not get a lot of listeners from that side. But which would have been interesting to be in that podcast so they could see how I think. But if you liked it and you came over, this is what Mike M's Weekly Reads is. A lot of ranting, a lot of topics, a lot of passion, a lot of just meaningless crap. So let me find the next question. What is your limiting factor? Money, time, interest, space. Okay. They're all sort of limiting factors, but money is the least of it. Time is a factor. But I'm gonna say time and interest are factors, but they're not big factors because I have this thing called a library mentality. I will build a library for myself of everything and then read it as a mood reader. I don't feel I need to keep current on every single book. I am like a librarian of comics. I actually go in and check out, go to my basement, pull out a drawer box. What do I feel like reading? Unknown Soldier. Okay, I'm gonna pull out a drawer box. Ooh, I don't have that issue. I'm gonna go to mycomicshop.com and order that issue. I'm also a completist. I like to have full runs of everything I can possibly have. Full runs of CrossGen, full runs of Valiant, full runs of Atlas, full runs of. I'm actually working a lot on Charlton lately. I am still trying to achieve every single DC comic since 1973 when I bought my first comic book out with my own money. And I've pretty much succeeded, believe it or not, with the main superhero titles like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Justice League, all the main titles. Most of the superhero proper titles, Green Lantern, Flash. I have all the comic books, every single published from that particular date forward. The ones that I'm missing, like this year, one of my resolutions is to focus on some of the war comics. I'm going to be focusing on completing Men of War, Sergeant Rock proper. I'm not going to go all the way back to Our Army at War, but I have started to get key issues in Our Army at War because those books do not get cheaper. They do not get cheaper. So I got to get in as soon as possible and get out. When I was in college, some of my smartest things were back issue purchases. I bought a lot of comic books that went up in value because I started to get complete runs of everything that was old. So the biggest one for me right now is space. I have about 70,000 comic books. One is a full basement full of them. And what I'm trying to do is move toys out of there so I can accommodate more space growth. And I have three closets full of them on the upstairs. One closet's not inventoried yet, but I have to inventory that. And if I can ever get a week off, that's what I want to do is I want to inventory that. Especially, I kind of know the time period that's from, and I just need to inventory it so I don't buy dupes by accident. Because I'll also talk how I collect. So space is the biggest problem, and what I'm going to be looking to. And oh, and I forgot, I have a whole room dedicated to collected editions, and it's become out of hand. All the bookshelves are filled. I now have stacks in the room up waist high from top to bottom of collected editions. And these books go out of print, and they're worth a lot. You'd be surprised how some of these books go up in the back issue stuff. But I have started to get organized a little bit in there. I have started to buy collectors' trade boxes, which are very they're designed so you put the trade in sideways so you see the side of it, you know where the title is, just like you would put it on a bookshelf. It goes into a box. And I've been putting all my Epic collections in there, a lot of the DC proper collected editions. Some of the things I triple dip in, I'm obsessive compulsive with Valiant. So I get every single hardcover, I get every single trade, and they have their own trade box. And then I have all the bookshelves with the stuff. What I want to do is I'm going to buy a good climate controlled storage unit and expand into that a little bit. But I want to free up some of that room there so I can keep the comics with me. And the other thing I want to do is migrate some of the toys. I have kept all of my toys. I used to be a toy collector just as I was a comic book collector. I have all of the first generation Star Wars figures. I have the Star Trek Mego dolls. I have all my Mego dolls. I have a Millennium Falcon first gen, a Star Destroyer, the Death Star, Navarone Army playset, Superman Spinball Pinball, just a collection of stuff. That's where I'm probably going to migrate some of that to the storage unit. But so much stuff, okay? So space, I would say, is my biggest factor, but I have means of growth, and I have ideas for expansion. And I hope that answers that question. Space being the biggest factor, but I do not want to go to digital. It's there's the collector's mentality. Overall, the thing that matters most is reading these comics. The next is the collecting mentality, which is I want to have the entire runs of everything. So I think that's the second question. In a nutshell, how do you describe your comic book collecting? One, reading, absolute passion for the characters, passion for the comics, passion for the sci-fi, passion for slice of life, passion for, I mean, I get all the Charles Forsman stuff, I get Tom Beland stuff, I get all kinds of stuff, a lot of indie horror, I love that stuff. So I would say loving comic books is what I do. That's what I was put on this planet to do. And support the industry. But I would say number one comes reading. And the most important thing to me there is DC Comics. That's the completeness in me. Although I am working on completions of like Marvel 2-in-1, Marvel Team Up this year. Those are two of my goals. I have a really good complete run of Captain America, but I have a few holes I need to fill. A lot of the expensive, I just completed Ghost Rider, every single volume of Ghost Rider ever published, including his Marvel Spotlight first appearance and stuff. I'm working on completing a lot of Marvel stuff that I did miss. What sort of criteria gets something on or off your reading list? Nothing usually comes off. That's the problem. I can only think of one comic book that I read a few issues of, and I really decided it wasn't for me, and that was Monstress from Image. It didn't hit a note with me personally. And that was the only one I could think of that I've cut. I can't think of anything else. So, criteria to put something off, you'd have to really be something I really don't like to come off. Matter of fact, there's this weird thing, like, number one with a bullet from Image Comics, okay? I rated that first issue a 2 out of 5, okay? But then I read 2 and 3 and I fell in love with it. It became a 5 out of 5. So I have this mentality that I need to read it all in order to assess, make an assessment of what the book means to me. And a lot of people, like my co-host on Geek Brunch, what his philosophy is, he wants to read the story. If number one hits him, it makes total engineering sense and logical sense to do that. So he buys a lot of issue number ones, and this would skew numbers because then you get a higher number one. But he buys single issues of number ones, and that makes a determining factor of, is that something I really want to commit to? And then if he does enjoy it, hits a certain threshold, the cost is all right, he says, I'm gonna buy the trade. And then he reads the trade, and then he decides, well, I enjoyed that, I'm gonna continue, or he stops. That philosophy makes a lot of sense. My philosophy is just get it all, put it in the library, and eventually I'll be in the mood for it. I'm a mood reader. I think that's why I love all my comics usually, is because usually I pick the mood. I don't feel forced to read what I read. I read what I'm in the mood for. If I want Western, if I want horror, I go read that. If I want retro, I don't feel like I need to be current. If I want to reread something, like right now, I'm just digging into the Monkey and the Doug Monk. Well, I'm trying to think. Oh, the Joe Kelly Justice League of America again. This is my like second read through it because I want to. A nunchuck. They introduce Manitou Raven, and you have the Obsidian Age, and like, oh God, you have some really good Plastic Man stories in that run by Joe Kelly. There's so much to talk about. I just love it. If I want to reread something, I reread something. I also have Marvel Unlimited, so the stuff that I didn't buy. For example, I didn't buy this book called Witches. It was a 4-issue series. Came out. Mike Diodato did the art, and I can't remember who did the story because the writer, I researched him and he never did any comics before this. So I don't know if he was an author that just came in to do this Doctor Strange story with Zatanna and other characters. But I loved it. I liked it. I gave it a 4 out of 5, and I was like, the philosophy there works for my comic shop because if I like something, I want the physical copies. So I'll go read that. Let's see what other questions he asks. What sort of criteria? Okay, on and off your reading list. Pretty much everything stays on the reading list because I have faith. I will enjoy it. With the exception of Monstrous, it's really something that didn't capture my attention. How do you maintain, store, organize your collection? This is a good question. This one I have talked a lot about on my own podcast because people have asked this question a gazillion times, but I'm going to go ahead and repeat this question. The way I maintain it, I use what I think is the best database out there. I've tried several of them. I think I've been a customer of these guys since they had floppy disks. Not the soft floppy, the 5 1/4, but the 3 1/2 or whatever they were. It's comic base. I have really loved this database. I've been a customer ever since. Every week I just go download. Well, actually, it's got an app called Sidekick that will download all the updates. Every week there's an updates from previews. It loads it all. It has all of the barcodes, UPC codes in it. So I have a barcode scanner. So, I use this database, so I get my box from DCBS or the comic shop for the week, and I usually declare Sunday as my maintenance day. I'll organize them by publisher and by alphabetically, and then I bring them over to the table where I have my database. And I go to the Comic Base app and I say batch load. So I go to batch and I say add comics to inventory. And I plug in my USB scanner and I just sit there and go bloop, 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 bloop. I scan them all in and they're now in the database and all inventoried. And this thing has so many reports I could generate. I could see a pie chart of like every single publisher I have, all the percentages of each publisher, the total number of comics, total value, that kind of stuff, because it's actually hooked into a pricing engine. It's a conservative pricing engine too. I don't know how they do it, but it's not Overstreet high. It's under Overstreet typically. So it has all those features. It also has a features where you can upload reports to your phone and run it on your phone. So if you're at a convention, you could say, okay, I want to run a report on missing issues of World's Finest Comics. And it will just show you which ones you're missing in case you're in the back issue bins and you want to make sure you don't get a duplicate. So many features. It has the one thing I love about it is the cover. You mouse over the cover and just blows it up. It goes boom, 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 boom until it covers the whole screen, and you can see all the details of the covers. You can do mass changes. If I get a full run of Witches, I could just say enter four. I have one issue of this in this grade. You can enter in the grades, you can enter in storylines. The only ones I have to enter in sometimes by hand, and it has all collected editions in there, is some of the collected editions. They're sometimes late to the game. I'm probably one of the primary key contributors for the Epic Collection because I'm all in on the Epic Collections, the Marvel ones, and I enter in 50% of the Epic Collections because they're not already in there. Enter in all the information according to their standards. I barcode scan them. So it has the barcode so future users can get it, and then they're all in there. As far as the comics, they're always in there. Unless it's a Kickstarter, then I manually enter it in. I put it in myself. So that's part of the process. Then they pretty much go into a drawer box. So all of my are official drawer boxes. I tried BCW and drawer boxes are much more effective to me because they're double layered. They can withstand a lot of pulls. BCW, they started to fall apart on me and I hated their they defeat the purpose of a drawer box because they have lids. Okay, so let's just say you have a long drawer box. You have to pull this heavy ass box that has bags and boards, pull it out, pull off the lid, and then you can see inside of it. With the drawer box, they have anchors on them. You can stack them five high, and if you use the anchors, the boxes are anchored to one another. You can pull it out, let it hang out, and you can merge in books, or you can file in books that way. They also have the capability to have like these rails. I've never purchased a rail, but I know people that have smaller collections that use rails. My friend Chris Campbell, I think I saw a rail system when I was at his house for his Valiant comics. But they have that available. So drawer boxes. Luckily, the guy that invented the drawer boxes is in Denver, so he's a hop, skip, and a drive away if I needed to go there. But there is one local shop that covers them. It's not my comic shop, but I go to this other comic box shop. This guy would love to have my business. He always freaks out because what I do is I go there and I buy 20 short boxes. Why do I do short? Because I'm getting older and I wish everything was a short box because I can lift and handle a lot of drawer boxes. There was one time I had a little bit of a flooding situation and my dad built me like these lifts in the basement, so it would take a lot of flooding to hit these marks in the basement. But so all my comics sit like, I don't know, 6 inches off the ground on these wooden. They're like pallets, but they're not pallets because pallets have holes in them. But they're these wooden things that my dad sized according to small drawer boxes. So I have these rows and rows of comic books, and I use those to keep them. Oh, if there's any kind of water issue down in the basement, that I would allow me time to get there and suck all the water out before it even got to the level of the comic books. I then so I go to this comic shop and I order roughly 20 to 25 short boxes. And you're like, why the hell do you do this? Well, this might sound crazy, but I go through 20 to 25 short boxes about every 4 months. So he gets my business 4 times a month. I order 100 short boxes a year probably, And I keep some in the storage unit so I could just go there, get some whenever I need them. And so I buy 25 short drawer boxes at a time. I put them in the storage unit. I drive to my storage unit, grab those boxes, and then I bring them when I need them. So I always have a drawer boxes. So when I bag and board them, oh, before I bag and board them, after I've inventoried them all, the Marvel comics, I carefully remove the digital code. I load those in case I'm ever on travel, especially during Christmas, man. I read a lot of digital comics. I load these codes up, or if I'm on vacation or on business travel, I have something that I can take with me, very portable on an iPad, and I have the digital codes for all the Marvel comic books. Matter of fact, over Christmas, I read a lot of comic books digitally because I have them loaded on the Marvel app. So before I put them in the bag and the board, I go through the digital codes. I enter them in at marvel.com. So I have them available digitally. And I was real anal about this. Like, it took a while for me to do this. Before I would just buy the Marvel comic book and then I'd read the physical copy and never use the digital code. But then I started to logically think, I'm paying for this. I looked at what it goes down, like percentage of points. So like it could go down from a 10.0 to like a 9.8 because the code's removed. It's not a big deal. At least to me, it's not. I started entering them in, so they're all available digitally. Have thousands of comics loaded on there, and they're available to me. So then I order by the thousand from E. Gerber, the regular size is great because it fits Silver Age, fits current comic books, Mylars, and I don't get that real thick one, but the next one underneath it, I get all of those. I have them sent to me with halfbacks. And I go to E. Gerber because I think they offer the best product. Once you go Mylar, and if you can afford it, oh God, they make a VG look like a fine look like a very fine, and a near mint look like it's so perfect. They never turn yellow. You never have to dispose of this old bag. The Mylars are awesome. I converted over to Mylars about 10 years ago. Never turned back. Never thought about going to polypropylene or any of those cheap products. I like all my books. And yes, oh, the other company I'm all in is almost Zenoscope. I do a lot of Zenoscope. So and everybody says, oh, that's just cheesecake. Really, the cover is cheesecake. The content of the book are really good continuity-driven stories. I'd argue that with anything. A matter of fact, my wife read like the first 12 issues of Grimm Fairy Tales, and she really liked it. And she was reading it along with Fables at the time. Let me see. Let me go back to the web page. And if you hear me walking around, I walk around while I podcast. Probably annoy the hell out of a lot of you. I drink during the podcast. I drink water. Like right now, I'm gonna take a sip. This water tastes weird. It's almost got like a fruity taste to it. So that tells you how I maintain them. So after I've inventoried them all, I've got the digital codes off. I don't do it for DC anymore because they have a weird digital thing now. It's just like some random issue. Used to be all the 399 ones had a code. It made sense for me to enter them in. They don't have that anymore. So I don't do the digital codes. They seem to say, okay, here's issue 5 of Justice League. We'll put a digital code. Here's issue 3, Superman. I'll put a digital code. It's like no rhyme or reason. I really wish now that they raised all their prices to $3.99 that they'd have a similar philosophy. So that describes how I maintain my books. I store them in drawer boxes. I use Mylars from E. Gerber. I use halfbacks as the backing boards. I store them in drawer boxes. I use the locking mechanisms for the drawer boxes so the boxes are anchored to each other. So when you pull and pull and pull, the boxes don't move. They're anchored to one another, about five, six, five high. How do you organize your collection? This one, I really wish I had a better answer. I organize them very similar to the other guy I was talking about, which is Mike Pindell. He has a library philosophy, sort of like mine, where he's got unread sections of long boxes or short boxes. I have the same thing. I have unread filed DC Comics, Marvel, all filed by publisher and in order. The only thing I have a problem with is when I read them, I don't have a good mechanism for merging. And here's why merging is so difficult. Merging, you kind of have to have, every time you merge with the quantity of books that I have, you have to have like a bunch of empty boxes, and then you have to pull out all the boxes and then add all your comics in and then shift one title over to the next box and then move things around so everything's in order. I have sort of gone away from that after listening to I do a comic book podcast called Mike M's Collector's Corner, where I talk to collectors, and some of you might know Bob Breitel. He has the Guinness Book of World Records. He was on the comic book page originally with John Mayo, but I talk to him. I have a collector's corner where I talk to collectors around the world, and I only do about six of those a year, but I do talk about people that are as passionate about comic books as I am. And different philosophies of collecting and how they do these things. And I like to talk to him because it gives me ideas. But he inventories, and the way he inventories is merges. I think he knows that merges are a nightmare. So he puts them all in like boxes in order by publisher and stuff. But as he reads them, so and then he marks the box like a number five box, and five box has these issues in it, and he fills that up, and then he knows what box five has in it. So when the, let's say, an auditor of the Guinness Book of World Records comes, says, "Show me Justice League 25, show me Daredevil 123," he's able to say, "Okay, that's in box 12." Well, that's kind of the mode that I'm going into. It's not the ideal mode, especially if you're like have this library mentality. You want everything to be in order. You want everything to be, I want all my Justice League books together in by alphabetically and by number. And then I want like all the Marvel with all the renumbering, I keep them in order by volume and by date on which they're published. So, I sort them like the comic book base app sorts them. So, that's how I deal with that question. That's how I organize my collection. The only thing I wish I had a better way of doing this is to hire somebody to do merges for me. I just don't have a time. I work, 50-hour weeks, sometimes longer weeks, depending on what's happening at work. Takes away a lot of reading time and a lot of organizing time. But I have a system that works. It works for my size of collection. Like I was saying, I haven't found a good way of tracking how many books that I get because I also buy a lot of comic books from my comic shop to fill in gaps, to have complete runs of things. But I sort of know how many books I'm intaking because I place a thousand, about 1,000 Mylights or Mylars last me about 2.5 months. So let's just say I order, that means I'm intaking about 4,000 books a month. It's probably more like 5,000 books a month. Because I don't always rebag and board some of the other books that I get that are already bagged and boarded in back issues. So I hope that answers your question. I don't think I'm going to drag you through any more pain of going through my weekly reads. But that will continue next episode as I catch myself up to current. Next week I'll be talking about books I read for December 10th through December 16th, answering listener questions and talking about whatever else I'm talking about. But this is a short episode. This is actually a short episode, believe it or not. So for those of you that listen to this that don't normally listen to my podcasts, I have several podcasts that I do, four podcasts. I do Mike M's Weekly Reads, which is me solo. It's sort of in this format that I just talk to myself. I don't script anything. I don't put any editing into it. I don't have time for that, and I've never done it. So what you get, what you hear is what I'm just streaming through in my brain, and it comes out in words. I don't write anything down. So if you like those kind of podcasts, you probably won't like this because that's what I do on Mike M's Weekly Reads. I talk about the comic industry. I talk about comics in general. I talk about my passion of what I read that week, books I've read in the past, where I'm going, what I'm thinking about current events, that kind of thing. That's Mike M's Weekly Reads. This is me rambling. I then have Mike M's Collector's Corner. And that one's a lot of fun. I have met some really unique people over the years. And I got to talk to Aaron Myers this year, who's a big time. He buys a lot of comics, but his philosophy is much different than mine, is he sells a lot of comic books too. So, and what his comic book purchasing does, he gets all these crazy deals, man. He buys a lot of large collections. But he was fascinating because what he sells is his comic book budget. So he never spends more outside of his income, outside of what he made selling comics. So that was fascinating to have him on the show. Having Kirk on the show was pretty amazing because he is so into war comics, and it was just fascinating talking to him about all the different war comics and what he was passionate about. But I focus on people that I find usually on the internet that have some, I've talked to people like Daryl Taylor, who I was co-host with on Gotham by Geeks, about digital comics because that's what he's passionate about, non-physical media. So I get into a lot of other things. I find something that there's somebody that I find on Twitter that I find interesting, and I try to reach out to them. I do want to try to get Michael Pindell on. I'm going to talk to Shane this year from Australia to talk about his collection, and we just have a lot of fun. That's Mike M's Collector's Corner. I then have Geek Brunch, and Geek Brunch is probably the longest ass podcast you'll ever listen to. It is me and Bill Bomer. It has a lot of history. It's been going on the longest. It's my longest running show. Bill wasn't always my co-host. It started off with Heath Holland and then went to Bill and Micah, and then Micah left, and then it's just me and Bill. And we just chat about comics, pop culture, food, movies, and TV that we did for the week. That's bi-weekly. I have a lot of fun with that one, and each episode is about 2.5 to 4 hours. Sometimes it's even hit 5. So when it gets to the point where it's half a work day, my philosophy is I don't care how long it is. Hopefully your device can hold it, but you can listen to it at your own pace. But we cover a lot of independence in that, and we talk about proper stuff and movies and TV and like I said, food. That's Geek Brunch. And then Geek Brunch Retro, that other one was with my co-host, Bill Bomer. And then Geek Brunch Retro is the same format, except it's everything that's 10 years or older. And my co-hosts for that are Chris, Ivy, and Rob Krieger. And we pretty much talk about three to four things we've each discovered that week in comics, movies, or TV. It's mostly comic book driven. I'd say it's 80% comic books and then 20% whatever else. But that is fun to do because it's whatever I want to do every other week that's retro. And I love covering retro stuff that I've already read, stuff that I've discovering for the first time in all kinds of different genres. And I like listening to what they have to give me because I learn a lot about them as we go through it. So those are the four podcasts on the geekbrunchpodcast.com site, available on iTunes and available on Stitcher. The other podcast I do was DC Noise, and that was absolute chaos. That was me, Keith, and Daryl. And that one I love to do. It just seems like we can't get together anymore. Things have changed. A lot of things have changed. And we'll try to do like four episodes a year, but we had a huge cult following in that podcast. We met a lot of people because of that podcast. I'll always remember that podcast is the most listened to and where people felt like they were part of the DC Noise family and can do quotes of it. A matter of fact, I was at one con and Keith at one time was a sous chef and he was singing a song called Ramps. And I didn't even know what ramps were. They were an onion. And I was at one con, I think it was at Baltimore Comic Con, and this guy became a really good friend of ours. A biker scout came up to me, and he's got that speaker, you know, and he's like, he can't. I was like, why is this biker scout looking at me? And he goes, ramps. And then I knew immediately he had to be a listener of DC Noise, and it just kind of made my day. There's been so many good memories of people just. There was one con, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Reed, which I've become good friends with, but and I actually met him. But there was one time where somebody just saw me looking through a box, never had seen me physically, but said, "I know your voice. Are you Mike Myers of Geek Brunch or DC Noise?" I can't remember which one it was. And sure enough, it was like, wow. So it's like really weird how some of these things happen. Yeah, this DC Noise was really special, and we don't do it so much anymore. But I have started with Kyle. Kyle was on a collector's corner, and I just hit it off with Kyle. One thing I love about Kyle is, the people I try to surround myself with are people that are not negative on comics and that just have a passion about what they're reading. And they just get like this excitement about comics in general, because those are the people that I want to be around. I don't want to be around naysayers. Because I always think that negative publicity about a comic book is stronger than positive. And I hate to say that, but it seems like that social media, that's what it does. Because on the internet, you'll have somebody says, "Oh, this sucks." And then it's like this hive mentality that kind of circle around this sucks, and then they all form like why it all sucks. And then but what I like to do is share the love, and I try to surround myself around people that love comic books because that's where I want to be. I don't want to try to complain about comic books. Yeah, there's comic books that I don't like or don't like the direction. I like Tom King's Batman. I'll be honest with you. There are times when I absolutely love it. It's a 5 out of 5, and there are times when the dialogue just kills me, and it drives me into this. When Batman's mumbling the same word over and over again, and it drives me batshit crazy, and I'll give it a 2 out of 5. So, but I always want to read it. I want to read the good, the bad. I want to know that's part of Batman's history. I need to know it. So I understand being negative and I understand being positive, and but I try to navigate around the positive. And Kyle, I hit it off with, and we do a DC spotlight where we talk about some current comics and some retro comics about DC. We talk about what we loved, some things that we didn't like, but we have a positive spin on it all. So that is on the DCNoisePodcast.com. I want to thank you for listening, and make sure to check out Comic Book Page, Preview Spotlight, and see what the listeners of that podcast are saying to answer these questions. They're probably not all long. I probably have an episode longer than the bulk of them, but that's just because I could talk a lot. But I enjoy the Comic Book Page podcast a lot, a lot. I've been there since day one. Weekly Comic Spotlight, I haven't missed an episode of. I've listened to every one of them. I don't usually listen to the TV ones because I don't know, for some reason I just don't get into TV, and I get real about TV. It's like I escape and I like to watch it, but when I don't like to like listen to people talk about it, so I don't usually listen to those. But I love the Mayo Report because it's like, what's selling? Why is it selling? Statistically, so, you know, there's a lot of interesting discussion in, you know, the top 300 comics that are selling. And then he has another one where you have a Mayo Report on trades, and that one's really interesting as well. So I would encourage you to go check out the Comic Book Page I podcast. I really enjoy it, and I think you will too. Weekly Comic Spotlight is James and John kind of going over one Marvel, one DC, one other book for the week. They may be changing up their format in this coming year as they are cutting back on some of their purchases, but I don't anticipate it to change too much. There might be a little more discussion at the tail end, but a little more narrowing down of what is selected for review. But I think the format is a good format. It's interesting to hear what other people have to say about the comic books. They rate theirs slightly different than I rate mine. I rate comic books on a Netflix because I find the words mean something more to me. Netflix used to, they don't do this anymore, but they used to have a 5-point scale, and the words meant I knew exactly where I could fit into that word. There, it felt, a 5 is I love it, a 4 is I really like it, a 3 is I like it, a 2 is I do not like it, and a 1 is I hate it. And I was like, man, that makes a lot of sense to judge something. But it kind of can map to John's mapping, which is an A, B, C, D, and an F. It's just a different philosophy. I think of those more like percentages. And then my college years get me all messed up because sometimes a 30% in an engineering class was the highest grade in the class, and that was an A. So my mind gets warped around that. But yeah, it's strange. But anyway, I want to thank you for listening. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter. That's the best way to get a hold of me. But my email is mike@comicbooknoise.com. And websites are Geek Brunch Podcast and DC Noise Podcast.com. So I want to thank you for listening to this little tirade or rant. It's not even a rant. It's like how I collect comics. How do I select comics? How I don't edit and just say all the time. But that's what you get. I hope you liked it, and I hope you check out Comic Book Page podcast, and the previews is a good place if you don't get previews to listen to what other people are passionate about and why for that particular month. So listen to the Preview Spotlight, listen to Weekly Comics Spotlight, the Mayo Report, and on trades and comics. And I will talk to you again soon. Peace out. If you get a chance, leave an iTunes review, and I will talk to you again very, very soon. Oh, the other thing that I do in Mike Gems Weekly Reads, just to mumble some more stuff, is I talk about my recent purchases and back issues, which I get quite a bit of, and what runs I'm trying to currently fill, and stuff I bought. Kickstarters that have arrived, all kinds of different stuff. So I will talk to you again very soon, and next time we'll be wrapping up. Sort of catching me up for the year for my weekly reads, and then things will be on a more timely basis as far as you're getting it more alive of what I read that week. Take care, and I'm gonna get some Tic Tacs and probably go watch some TV on this Happy New Year, everybody. First of January. I hope it's a very healthy and prosperous year for you, and I hope you read a lot of comics and get a lot of comics because we got to keep this industry alive because it's a dying breed because of things that we didn't have, we with all the multimedia that it has to compete with. And the majority of people want to see a movie and a TV thing. Or play a video game rather than actually read a comic book. So, the more you can spread the word and love comics, hopefully we'll be able to at least keep an equal balance between now and by the time I die so I can get physical media as long as I can possibly can. Very selfish reasons. All right, well, I'll talk to you later. Peace out. And I'll probably release this episode on Friday, so we'll talk to you soon. Bye.